in one app.
It's time for our weekly Pac-12 conversation with San Jose Mercury News reporter John Wilner. Brought to you by Simply Seattle. Our friends at SimplySeattle.com have the most amazing collection of all things Seattle. Seahawks gear, UW hats, and the largest selection of Sonics gear anywhere in the world. Learn more at SimplySeattle.com.
I'm checking out the website, SimplySeattle.com, and they have a collection of dope Kraken hats, as the kids like to say.
Okay.
Dope Kraken hats. I use the fire emoji on my Twitter account, by the way, which makes me feel like a complete dork.
Kids in 2021, right? Or kids in 1998?
Yeah, exactly.
Like
so,
to say dope.
Well, I would say they're rad. They're rad.
Oh, yeah.
All right?
Radical, baby.
So check it out. They're tubular, man. on the website, simplyseattle.com. Be sure and use code SOFTY at checkout for a little discount. Here he is joining us on the radio show.
Speaking of dope,
John Wilner. Oh, wow.
Not a dope.
Taking
but he
shots
is dope.
At him already.
No,
oh, I thought you were
he's
taking
dope.
Shots at him for his UCLA Gonzaga prediction. His USC Gonzaga prediction. That was mean, man. People were killing you for that. But you know what? You're a grown man. You can handle it.
I guess. I had the wrong LA team, you know?
Yeah.
I never thought Gonzaga was going to win the thing. It was just a matter of who got him, and I was surprised that they handled USC the way they did.
Yep.
But boy, I think that the UCLA game definitely took something out of them.
Well, let me ask you this. Puckett and I had this conversation yesterday. I don't think that it showed to me that UCLA was underseeded. I think it showed that UCLA underperformed during the regular season. I mean, that team that I saw that rolled through the schedule that they played in the tournament, those guys should have been better, don't you think?
I do think, to a certain extent, yes. I mean, they lost their best player in the middle of January, and then they lost their best interior defender in the middle of February. So, and then, you know, their best player is a transfer. So it's, you know, the parts were missing, and that, you know, it took them a while to come together. And then they lose four in a row at the end, right? And they were leading by double digits in three of them. And you're like, boy, what's going on here? But then all the teams that they lost to down the stretch, Colorado, Oregon, SC, and Oregon State, all won games in the tournament. So it's not like they were losing to bad teams. They were basically lucky to get in, very fortunate to get in, and then they kind of got a second life.
Well, now we looked at your piece today, and you've got the early rankings for next year. The Pac-12, depending on what publication you looked at, John's got three or four teams ranked, and I'm wondering, should teams be ranked higher for the following season just because they had a good tourney? Because I don't think the Pac-12 would be ranked in next year's poll where they are had they not won a couple of three games in the tourney.
Oh, yeah, I think the tourney has a lot to do with it because that's all eyes are on it, and that's when you're supposed to be playing your best and you get to kind of show what you got. And I think it has a lot to do with it. And it's all part of this cycle. And we see it in football, too, right? You know, the off-season rankings affect the preseason rankings, and that affects the entire narrative. And, you know, I think that the fact that UCLA is right now number one in some early rankings for next season is gonna help the conference. And you know, rising tide lifts all boats, and UCLA is probably the best rising tide the Pac-12 could have.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw a couple polls that had him number one, and our buddy Aaron Torres has him number two in the country for next year. So, you know, five games all of a sudden is the difference between being a team that nobody's talking about. Now they're ranked number one in the entire country. So it should help the conference for sure. But John Wilner is with us on the radio show. And John, I wonder, because you and I talked about this off the air, Ethan Garber's retweeted a tweet from a LA Times writer who talked to the head coach at Corona Del Mar, who's saying that Ethan wants to play right away at UCLA, but UW is blocking it, making him sit out a year. We had this conversation with Yank off a year ago when they wouldn't let him play, or 2 years ago when they wouldn't let him play right away. Can you explain the rule here, how this works? Take us behind the curtain and talk about how the interconference transfers are supposed to work.
Well, I can tell you that the person from the Los Angeles Times who reported that is the most renowned high school writer probably on the West Coast. He is an excellent reporter, impeccably sourced. So this is not coming out of, you know, some guy with a computer's basement, so to speak. So the deal with the transfers is, you know, in the summer of 2019, the conference changed the rule, which allows you to transfer. We're talking about undergraduates, very important for readers or listeners, undergraduates only here. Undergraduates can move from one school to another within the conference without losing the year of eligibility. If you're a junior, when you transfer from Washington State to Utah, you're still going to be a junior. But that they didn't remove the rule that says you got to sit out. So that requires a waiver. My understanding is you have to have a waiver that's got to go through the conference office, and it's got to be approved by the originating school if you want to play right away as an undergraduate at your new school.
Okay.
As far as I know, Washington has not approved a waiver for Ethan Garbers to play right away. Now, the interesting part is that the NCAA, I believe next week, I know we've been talking about this for 9 months, but next week the Division I Council, they very well approve the free transfer rule, which means you can go from one school to another and play immediately without having to sit out a year. That would take effect for the fall. So if that rule gets approved, transfers all over the country can be eligible immediately. My guess is the Pac-12 will have to essentially reevaluate its intra-conference transfer rules once the NCAA umbrella is basically lifted, because you can't, I don't think the conference could get away with having a more restrictive transfer rule than the NCAA is allowing. That would not work. The ACC has already approved immediate eligibility for transfers within the conference. And I think that the Pac-12, Big 12, Big 10, SEC probably are all going to do the same thing. So if the council next week approves this immediate eligibility, mm-hmm. you know, I would think that everybody's going to be eligible wherever they go next season. Mm.
Why do we have, Softy and I were talking about last segment. It seems silly to me that the onus of responsibility would even fall on an individual school to determine whether or not. I mean, shouldn't it just be an edict from the conference, either you can transfer freely or you can't? Because all this, you know, giving a school the option thing, I mean, that's loads of problems, isn't it?
It is loads of problems, and my guess is that some of the schools may prefer to have the conference kind of take it over, so to speak. But it's a tricky situation because you've got personal situation, severe, you know, personal hardship that you need an exception for. Sometimes there's accusation of poaching and tampering. You know, they have different, the rules, I should have said, you know, the rules are different based on the sport. Football, men's basketball have one set of rules, but there's a whole bunch of sports that play by a different set of transfer rules.
Yeah.
So it's a very complicated situation, and everybody would be better off if there was one set of rules, blanket rules for every conference in the country. But I think we're going to be getting there pretty soon, assuming the Division I Council moves on this.
John Wilner is with us, courtesy of Simply Seattle. Are there examples of players transferring within the conference recently that are not grad players and playing right away that you know of?
There are not. I went through the transfer portal and came out on the other end with my sanity, believe it or not, and looked at the last 2 years, and I could not find a case where a football player has moved from an undergraduate has moved from one school to another within the conference and played immediately at the new school. Certainly graduates is a whole different case. But I couldn't find any. You know, there's a kid, Jalen Harris, an Arizona linebacker at Arizona, who transferred from Colorado. That he's waiting on this NCAA legislation, and there's a few other cases. So I'm not aware of any. Maybe I missed one, but I don't think there has been.
John, I want to go back to something you wrote about this week about the Pac-12 and what they need to learn from their basketball success. Can you kind of outline what you wrote there?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's important to take this experience and try to build on it, right? And the conference quietly put in place a scheduling strategy for men's basketball. And you could argue that that set scheduling strategy saved UCLA's postseason because the Bruins lost four in a row to end the regular season, but they only dropped five spots in the net rankings from the beginning to the end of that four-game stretch. And they were the third-to-last team into the tournament. So the scheduling strategy, in theory, propped up the net rankings for everybody. And it just occurred to me that, look, they've got five or six people in the conference office who are devoted to basketball strategy. And they meet every week, and they go through metrics, and they do all this kind of stuff. And why not do something like that in football, right? Why shouldn't the conference be putting its best minds to work on the football side? And instead, what we've seen for the last, you know, 6-8 years is Commissioner Larry Scott and his former chief lieutenant for football, Woody Dixon, who didn't have a background in football, and they were kind of a two-man show. And I just think that now there's a new commissioner coming in. Maybe they ought to, you know, put together some kind of football strategy committee. They could even get, you know, former coaches. For instance, a former coach at the University of Washington. You could get the best minds and put them together and try to come up with strategies to get the conference back up where it needs to be in football.
Yeah. John, I'm looking at your Twitter account, at Wilner Hotline. John Wilner is with us, and I see a story from 5 hours ago that you retweeted that California is going to fully reopen businesses, concert venues, movie theaters, restaurants, convention centers, etc., statewide, starting June 15th with masks still required. UCLA opens up the year August 28th against Hawaii. They host LSU at the Rose Bowl on the 4th. Are we going to see 90,000 people there?
I don't think so. The way they're going to do the sporting events is the capacity is going to depend on, you know, the tier that your county is in, and which depends on, you know, the spread, community spread, the positivity rates, all that kind of thing. It's all going to be connected. The attendance will be connected to where things stand locally, mm-hmm. right? You're going to have 25% capacity, 50%, 75%, et cetera, based on where things are. So if things are pretty good in LA County, then maybe they will have, you know, 50 or 75% capacity in the Rose Bowl. It'll be interesting to see what happens. They're moving quickly here. I think it's all, you know, they're basing it on the fact that there's going to be enough vaccine for everybody by the middle of the summer here. But it's encouraging for the football season to think that, I mean, I think most places in the Pac-12 would be at least 50% capacity.
John, what'd you think of the poll that West Coast Football threw out a couple weeks ago with the best football teams in the last 30 years in the Pac-12? Did you agree with the 91 Huskies being ahead of Pete Carroll's Trojans?
Well, I'm trying to think West Coast Football. I would say this. I think that those teams are, you know, you could flip a coin between the 91 Huskies and the 04 Trojans. Those are the two best. Yeah. Pac-12, Pac-10 teams that I've seen, you know, in my time out here. There's no question about that. A little bit different, you know. I think that SC was a little bit more balanced, but while Washington, I mean, that was the best defense arguably the conference has ever seen. That 91 team, just two terrific teams. To me, I don't know if they're head and shoulders above everybody else, but they're the clear 1-2 or 2-1.
Right. Well, I tell you what, this Gonzaga basketball team, I'd just be curious to get your take on where they stand in the list of the greatest West Coast basketball teams of all time, despite the fact that they lost last night.
Well, you know, so happens I published that this morning. I started working on it yesterday, and I'm thinking, all right, well, it could be close win for Baylor, close win for Gonzaga, big win for Gonzaga. The one scenario that I didn't really see Gonzaga getting run out of the gym, but I figured, what the hell, I'll publish it anyhow. Because some really good teams from the West have lost, you know, one game. I would put them, I think I put them seventh or eighth. You know, they're really good, and I don't think that the last 40 minutes should necessarily completely take away from everything else. They beat a bunch of ranked teams during the season, and they beat them badly. And they were really impressive. Are they one of the three or four best ever? No, no way. But they're on that list of top 10 or top 12, I think, for sure. At least since John Wooden retired.
Where would they have been had they won that game last night?
I think you could have made a case. I would never put them number one. To me, the 1990 UNLV team is the best team from the western third of the country.
That's fair.
But, you know, you could argue if Gonzaga had won, I think that, you know, it's either Gonzaga or the UCLA 95 team, which was 35-1 or something like that. They would have been, when I originally mapped it out, that was my calculation. Is Gonzaga going to be number two or number three if they win?
I think you're missing the 2003-2004 Husky basketball team that took UAB to the limit, baby, in the tournament.
It was the hottest team.
Show some respect where it's due. John Wilner, great stuff, man. Love it, and we'll talk in a week, buddy. Appreciate this, man.
Thanks, John.
Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
You got it, man. John Wilner with us. John mentioned, there's a guy on Twitter here. I'm multitasking, by the way. Matt DeBlasi on Twitter said that UW is the only trash-ass school that enforces the you must sit out a year if you want to transfer to Pac-12 rule.
So that's blatantly false.
Well, to which John said he went back and could not find one undergrad player that played right away. And somebody responded with Devin Williams, who plays for Oregon. He actually played one game for USC in 2019 and then transferred right away in the fall to Oregon. So he sat out the rest of the 2019 season and then played in 2020. So trust me, if John can't find one, it's because they ain't there.
Don't exist.
We got a break. Testimonials with a twist? Yeah, a little twist?
I think we even have a twist that you guys have no idea about.
Okay, because I'm hearing that Texty is actually staging a protest.
He is.
Texty is tired of driving to work like an Amazon driver and having to pee in a bottle. So he's protesting. Wow. So he may not be available for the segment coming up. Testimonials brought to you by our friends at hammerandnail.built on the Coors Seltzer text line 49451. Lots of stuff we're kicking around. Were you happy to see Gonzaga get their doors blown off or sad that you didn't see history last night? Should players of the Pac-12, if they want to go to another Pac-12 school, be forced to sit out right away? Or should they be eligible right away? What about the cornerback position now with Dunbar moving on? Is it a bigger need now than any other on the football team with the Seahawks coming up next on 950 K?